welcome to episode 14 of Vancouver Overcast with Mike Klassen. I want to thank all the listeners out there that have been reaching out and commenting on the podcast. I was delighted to hear from a ranking service that placed this podcast at number 86 in the political podcasts in Canada. And while there's a bit of work to be done to get up the charts, I'm pleased to be on a top 100 of any kind. So I'd kindly ask you as the listeners to subscribe, like, and rate the podcast either through Apple, Spotify, or the many other podcast services, or visit www.overcastyvr.ca to learn how to subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. And if you're interested in supporting more of this kind of programming, please visit patreon.com/overcastyvr, or to learn more, or visit Facebook or Twitter at overcastyvr. So now on to today's interview. I believe that all of us would like to have a long, healthy life in both body and mind. But as our populations get increasingly older, the number of individuals with some level of cognitive decline is staggeringly high. For people living in long-term care, for example, as many as two-thirds of residents might be experiencing mild to severe symptoms of dementia. Proof of how to slow or stop the progression of dementia as we get older has eluded science until recently, thanks to groundbreaking research that was conducted by today's podcast guest and his colleagues. So I'm pleased to welcome to the podcast Dr. Sylvain Moreno. He's the Chief Executive Officer and Scientific Director at Digital Health Circle, as well as being a tenured faculty at SFU's School of Interactive Arts and Technology, and Special Advisor to the Office of the Vice President, Research and International. His research focuses on neurotechnologies and their implications for education and rehabilitation. He is the recipient of numerous national and international awards, and his work has been featured on a variety of media, including television and newsprint. Dr. Moreno led a team of researchers to produce a report that they argue will show the direct correlation between physical activity and engaging in art and music activities and the onset of dementia. The study titled Moderate Intensity Physical Activity, Music and Art Initiatives Preserved Cognitive Health in Older Adults, An Argument for Social Prescribing Solutions, is linked in the show notes below. So with all of that introduction, welcome, Sylvain. Thank you very much for coming on Vancouver Overcast with Mike Klassen.
Well, thank you for having me.
So we did give a bit of an introduction, but tell us a bit about yourself. When I spoke to you earlier on, I joked that I'm not hearing a City of Burnaby accent. So I'm assuming that you're from some far-flung place, but to maybe tell us a little bit about where you're from and how you ended up working here in BC and doing this research.
Yeah, so I grew up in the south of France. So the sunny region that most of you guys know. I got passionate by research and trying to understand how we can impact the brain, how we can help people with different brain-related disease, and how technology can take a place in that question. And through that, there was some key work that were done in Canada. And so I got recruited first by University of Toronto to start doing research there, and then I become a professor there, and just I discover like the fantastic scene of British Columbia and the key researchers in that field that work here that brought me to accept a position with Simon Fraser University.
And how many years did you say that you've been working out here in BC?
Oh, in BC it's been 6 years now.
Very good.
And I arrived in Canada in 2007.
So many of my listeners might know that my day job is working for an advocacy organization that represents the seniors care sector here. So every day I'm confronted with the issues around aging and as well the importance that we are able to support older adults in our community. We have very fine organizations like the Alzheimer's Society of BC, which BC Care Providers works very closely with. But so when it comes to this topic, it's something that I like to consider myself to be somewhat familiar with, but I have so much to learn. So maybe you can start off by telling us why we're starting to see more signs of decline in cognitive health across society.
Well, yeah, that's one of the key questions. You know, I think what happened is with the finding that we had in medicine or in health-related field, we have to have a portion of our lifespan that have been improved. And that has been probably the care in old age, but also the care in younger age. One thing that has been a key factor of this increase of longevity has been also the reduction of infant mortality. And so that means the global of the population is living longer now when we had a lot of death, you know, like for example, 100 years ago in infant. So I think those are the two reasons why we have that. Then next is there is this kind of notion that have been advanced by scientists in different fields, but one leader of that is probably Dr. St. Clair in Harvard, where he had pushed the idea that death is an illness and we can beat it in some ways. So it's obviously an extreme idea, but there is this more and more evidence that say, well, we can live a very healthy life very late in our life and keep most of our faculties very late in our life. And so how we can do that, and this is, for example, the concept of superagers, you know, people that age very gracefully and with all their cognitive resources. And so people like me are kind of asking, okay, if this exists, I mean that maybe everybody can reach that stage and can become a superager. So how can we do that?
So you did describe it's the fact that we're living longer by and large as a society, but there are parts of the world where people live very cognitively healthy for a longer year. So is it something that we are experiencing more in Western cultures, cultures that are, perhaps working themselves to death, if you like, or finding just having the sort of social connectivity of family and community, and even being active and respected in the community is going to lead somebody to have a stronger and healthier cognitive function as they get older?
Yeah, I mean, like there is several variables that have been identified by the research that have a strong link. For example, like, you know, isolation is linked to cognitive decline. So not being isolated, being surrounded by family, by friend, by community is very important, for example. What's happening now that is kind of like a change in our scientific field is this notion of understanding that a link is not automatically a cause. And so that's probably where is the scientific challenge right now for us, is to understand what exactly are the cause of those benefits or those kind of like highly cognitive, healthy people in later years in age, what brought them there, you know, and what are those activities or those circumstances that we can really associate directly that the cause effect to those benefits. And that, for example, that's why this research that we are talking today is so special. Because my student Ali Arab has succeeded with this work is really to push forward the notion of how can we understand the cause that will lead to this benefit? And so he used a model and applied that on thousands of people, understanding we collect the information of what they do in their daily life, but how can we understand that activity X compared to activity Z is really the impact factor? So we use a very solid mathematical model that allow us to pair individuals that are exactly the same except for this activity. And so this mathematical model pair match thousands of people with thousands of people to make sure that we isolate one element, and then we can conclude when this element come out significant in our result that this is a cause of this cognitive benefit that we observe in those people. And so that's been the unique aspect of this study. And the activities that come out positive are moderate physical activities, taking music classes, taking art classes, for example. And so those are activities that we know now are directly causing a benefit for cognitive health.
I can't begin to understand the complexity of the brain. And you talk about trying to improve the neurocognitive circuitry of the human brain. But it seems to me that your findings look at both physical and mental exercise as being factors that will contribute to somehow improving that circuitry and allowing people to remain cognitively strong as they get older.
Yeah, we you know, like the approach we take with Ali is, it was an other collaborator like Martin Esther and Gregory Christie that are in the scientific research here. I've been like, we wanted to try to understand what is the impact in the real life. We didn't want to create something artificial that we bring people in a lab and constrain them to do that during several hours, and that a completely unnatural way that they will do in their real life. We wanted them to say, okay, what are you doing? And we're going to find a mathematical method to capture this impact and to isolate it. And so basically we review a lot of activities, and you can find all those information in the scientific paper, that there is a link there. And some didn't come out. So for example, when there is this kind of idea that when you do very intense exercise during a lot of hours, like every day, you're going to have like tremendous benefit. We didn't see that at all. Actually, the most powerful was moderate physical activity. And so this is also something that kind of break a myth, right? So it's not like you don't have to kill yourself to receive a tremendous benefit. Actually, something very light and but repetitive will have positive impact for you.
I suppose that as you get older and as I get older, we start to think a little bit of what kind of quality of life we want to have when we are in our sort of later years. And when you're younger, you don't think so much about it, so you can kind of obviously carry on as you'd like. But I'm thinking about that sort of mild activity that you're describing is being able to walk through your community, is being able to go to shopping, it's going to be able to visit with friends. You know, we're not talking about doing push-ups and laps on a track, but we're talking about just keep moving for the most part. Obviously thinking about things about weight and diet and all the rest of it. But that activity piece seems to me, that's the lesson for us. It's a lesson for our whole society, for a society that has gotten too heavy and too dependent on car transportation and are not using the sidewalk in front of their homes nearly enough. That's something that we really need to promote for people who are living today and for the later years in their life.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think there is two notions here. Like, first notion is very important to live in an area where, for example, you can walk. I think that's like, I can tell you that the first advice I give to my parents, you know, like they are trying to downsize where they live. I say the first criterion for you should be that you can have access to everything you want to do in your day walking distance, because research show that actually there is several research in Europe that I show that this is very beneficial. And the second aspect is what you do to preserve your cognitive health doesn't need to be boring and annoying and difficult to maintain. It can just be, okay, I'm going to decide to register to the choral at the community center, or to the painting classes at the community center, and learn a new activity, meet some friends. And this has shown in our research that has a tremendous impact on the brain. So that has this other kind of like idea. It doesn't have to be painful. It can be nice. It can be an opening mind initiative and or like adventure. But the most important for you is to commit and to do that every week.
So, it seems to me that I've been hearing for years, before your study, of course, that physical activity is something that will lead to a healthier, will help to reduce the potential effects of dementia. But your study now seems to prove that. It's been described as groundbreaking. So tell us why you think this this study is groundbreaking and really verifies that idea that physical and mental activity is going to reduce the rates of dementia.
Well, I think one notion that makes this study different is, first, we replicate a kind of like, you know, clinical trial environment at the mathematical level throughout thousands and thousands of people, when the other studies are generally like, you know, 30 to 40 people and try to analyze that. So we have like a very impressive corpus of people or population. So that gives us a good idea of the viability of the population. That's one strong aspect. The second aspect is, which is really rare, is we are not talking about a link. Oh, some people who do that have also this kind of benefit. The studies show a causal relationship. So if you do that, it's guaranteed you're going to have some benefits for that. So that kind of reassures also and provides this message that there is a possibility for you tomorrow to improve your brain health, right? A lot of factors are like things you could have done when you were young. So that's kind of depressing when you are like, you know, 60 years old. Like, it's like, okay, I cannot change my past. I can only change tomorrow. And so this is kind of, I think, one of the positive aspects of this study that show you that there is a clear things you can do. Like I say, take a music class at the community center. As a second, the probably third aspect, sorry, that is like new, but also I think can give hope to our population and to the seniors that are hearing us today, is the notion that this kind of validate this a new avenue of healthcare system that happening throughout Europe and which has been very successful in Europe, is what we call social prescribing. And this is the idea of, instead of prescribing drugs to patients or to people who want to improve or just reduce the cognitive decline, is you prescribe activities, and activities that they like in their neighborhood. And that has been shown to have tremendous success. Actually, there is a pilot study that's happening that is conducted by BC United Way, and that seems to show positive also result. So we are hoping that here in BC, we're going to be able, through the help of several partners, to push this idea that social prescribing could be actually a part of our healthcare system of the future.
I know I've done some work with United Way here in BC, and they're doing terrific work out in the community. Social prescribing, to me, I love the sound of it. It just, I mean, obviously people just want to be able sometimes to take a pill and to sit down and they figure that's their way towards better health. But the idea that you would prescribe activities and the steps in your own life is really, I think, really powerful. And we're only beginning to kind of grasp what that means. And I believe there are precedents for this that have been tried out in the UK. Can you describe a little bit of what the social prescription movement looks like today and where it might possibly want to go?
Yeah. Okay, it's going to sound bizarre for most people who don't know, but basically, like when you go to your GP and the GP is starting to see sign of cognitive decline or any kind of cognitive issues, there is actually now with the research understanding that there is specific activity that will benefit certain issues. And so the GP in UK, for example, or also in Netherlands, that's another country where he has been successful, where he actually going to say, okay, what kind of those range of activities appeal to you? So let's say, I know, Mike, you like dancing and you want to just start salsa dancing. The GP will connect you with actually a salsa community class, where you can actually go the next week and follow this regimen. a little bit the same thing that when you go, like, you know, you twist your ankle and you're going to go see the physiotherapist during, like, you know, a series of weeks to try to rework on the muscle and the movement. You will do the same, but with a social activity that we know will impact your cognitive health.
I'd love it if somebody said, it's today's your day that we're prescribing you to go for a walk on the beach. Yeah. Or to walk to your neighbor's house and visit them. So I think what the next step for this is to really propagate the idea and promote it. And I think that I don't suppose that you've done any estimate on what kind of cost savings that governments could really be looking at if they are able to reduce even by a degree. Rates of dementia in society. I think I sort of heard that mentioned, but I don't know if I read any numbers in your research.
Yeah, that's not my area of expertise, but there is actually research that has been done in UK and Netherlands that shows a social benefit, a health benefit, but also a reduction of costs for the healthcare system. Those arguments are already in place in Europe. I think that's what we need to build up here, with different partners like the Ministry of Health, the health authorities, but also key partners like the university, like SFU, UBC, and also United Ways. Actually, this is those programs where we try to understand what can we do new in the healthcare system are already happening inside of Simon Fraser University with collaboration with Fraser Health Authorities, for example. I think that my colleagues here at SFU will be able to soon provide information on those kind of work.
You've talked a little bit about how this could be enacted in a healthcare setting, but I would argue that some of the biggest stakeholders are going to be local government. And the reason I say that is they're so responsible for the place that we live. In terms of the quality of mobility, whether it's either local transportation or even the how well maintained sidewalks and streets are, getting around is so critically important. And the fact that we have an engineer whose job it is to spend all day to try and figure out where to put pavement or where to put concrete to build a road, there should be an equivalent person in that office talking about that sort of the social prescription piece, or having the ability to make sure that communities are well connected, easy and safe to travel by foot or by bike or other sort of active transportation. I feel like that's where this is going to get some.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I think you're totally right. There is actually a study that show that when a city is the environment, the urban environment is not appropriate for people walking in and access to different central points of the city, like the train station or the bus station or things like that, or the city hall or the library or the swimming pool. This improves the health of the population. There is actually a field of research that shows that urban environment definitely affect the health of people. So I think that's kind of like the future where we are going to not work anymore in silo. And this is like probably one of the points of the organization Digital Health Circle, where we really try to bring the different stakeholders to try to tackle those projects that you are describing so well, Mike. And you cannot do that without everybody at the table, right? You need to have the cities, you need to have the health authorities, you need to have the universities, you need to have the not-for-profit, but you also need to have the industry partners that are playing a key role in our society, right?
I'm glad you brought up the Digital Health Circle. I was going to ask you to tell us more about Digital Health Circle and where it got its start and what its mission is and what are some of the projects that you're very excited that you're working on right now there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm passionate by Digital Health Circle. So this has been like a baby of mine that I really, really try to develop. Digital Health Circle was born from this notion that we need to stop working in silos. Right. We need to stop like having researcher trying to understand a problem, finding something, and then never discussing with the medical team or the health authorities or the patient themselves, right? For example. So the point of Digital Circle is really to connect government, academia, industry, not-for-profit, and users. So that could be patient, that could be you and I, anybody in our population, so the Canadians. And so what we do is we focus on projects in health that could make a difference in the life of Canadians right now is another impact that we have and a very model for us. We're not looking at changing the life in 20 years. We're looking at projects that can be applied right now, like the research of Ali, my PhD student, where we have like, you know, tomorrow we can register to a music class or to an art class or to go walking in the park. This is something that we can do right now. So we're trying to propose solution for Canadians that can change a portion of their life or improve their life right away.
In the fall of 2018, I was involved in coordinating something very similar to what you're describing. We called it the Communities of Care Forum. We held it in Kelowna and invited BC Nonprofit Housing, BC Housing, Alzheimer's Society, Stantec, from an engineering firm that has a large interest in how we design and develop buildings and structures, and really started, brought together this fantastic group of stakeholders from all over many organizations. Just, and we should have had you in the room. It's clear to me that it's too bad that we've met 2 years later. But and I think that conversation will continue and should continue. But it really is about bringing people together to start thinking about, and it really is about community development. I think that's the key part of it. It's about the experience on the ground what people have with their surroundings, and of course it's park space. But it's just being able to have access to services that are within shorter distances, and not having to get into a vehicle every time you do that, right?
Yes, you're totally right. And, you know, I think this is also building for the long term. And this is the way we have to approach our problem right now. We cannot think that, you know, if we're facing a problem, that we're going to be able to resolve this problem by ourselves. I think problems are becoming, because of the complexity of our society, as multiple facets. And like, we need to really be a group to really think about it. And, you know, one of the issues that we see all the time is like this kind of top-down process where we try to resolve the problem and we never talk to the people who have the problem on an everyday basis, right? So that's also very important for me to involve patient, but also like different group of stakeholders that inside of our research.
I'm talking to Dr. Sylvain Moreno. He's the CEO of Digital Health Circle. He's the scientific director there, and he's also a tenured professor at Simon Fraser University. He and his team have published some groundbreaking work that makes it clear that if you are active physically and active in other ways, either through art and music programs, that you can stave off the effects of dementia in later age, something that is increasingly becoming a problem for our healthcare system. So with this great research that you have at your in hand now, you really do need to find ways and find ways to champion. Obviously, talking to podcasters is one way of doing that. But how can we socially prescribe some of the findings of your report in a way that that more of us are talking about it and acting upon it? Because I think everything from climate change, for example, and our use of energy and our aging society here in Canada really demands that we look at solutions that are easy to implement, so we don't fall under the weight of all of the costs of healthcare that are going to come if we don't really take actions now.
Yeah, that's a tough question, Mike. So this is always hard to answer that one. I think the approach you propose is, I think, what is meaningful. That this is something that we have to consider for the long term with everybody at the table and not isolated. Like, it makes no sense to just focus on climate change and then find a solution, but not understanding if this solution has repercussions on the health of the citizen that even worse than what we had before. I think those discussions need to take place where across domain, we sit at the table and we talk to each other and we talk between experts, but not only between experts. We need also to talk to everybody that is involved in our society and hear the voice of everyone. I think that if there is one message that we try to push forward throughout my lab at Simon Fraser University or throughout Digital Health Circle is really this notion of everybody has a voice. And you will be surprised, and I know you are a big defender of that, but how much we can learn when we just take the time to listen and is not slowing down the process, is really improving the quality of data that we can use to build the right solution for Canadians.
I'm thinking of what a social prescription looks like, because, you know, when you've got the little doctor's pad with it, and I could see them writing down on the menu, on the slip of paper, I feel like that's something that we need to get into people's hands is social prescriptions that have check boxes like, you know, take an art class, take a music class, walk to your neighbor's place, go shopping and carry the groceries home. Something like that is it has to be sort of simple in some ways for people to realize that they can do it themselves. I'd love to be able to see something like that.
I think that's the first step. You know, like the first step is to do that. Then probably we can, like in UK, like the not-for-profit, the community center are connected with the health system. And see this connection that make everything easier and faster, and everybody can be implemented. So I think it's as easy as that to start. You know, just getting like for example, this research can be used, the one that we just published, and then a medical doctor can just provide that to their patient.
Are your partners at the university engaging with you on this research, and in what ways would do you think that they would like to see it more widely discussed and described and implemented?
So this is like, you know, this research has been like, you know, all works in 3 years with Dr. Martin Esther, Dr. Andrew Sixney, Dr. Greg Christie, Ali Arad, the student that worked with us. But is also a long research program that involves several faculty, such as like Dr. Farnak Parzant, Dr. Caroline Sperry, where we really try as a group, and those are like, you know, computer scientists, neuroscientists, engineers, medical doctors, designers, that where we really try to get this multi kind of like expertise to try to understand this problem and to push that forward. So for us, the next stage is really to try to investigate even more. Can we find a link between those activities and brain changes right away? So how much time we need to do those activities to really change the brain? What are the other activities that could be also beneficial? So we want to explore that and to go deeper in those ideas. But another area where we are very sensible to is this notion of profile. Can we define profile of individual where activity like music will be better or more beneficial for this type of person compared to another type of person? And so understanding that and going towards a personalized medicine level is probably key in the next stage for us.
Interesting. So in other words, art classes might not be for everyone, but some light physical activity might be something that would be better suited to somebody else. Is it sort of tying the prescription to the individual? Is that what you're describing?
We want to get like as precise as we can, more we advance. We know that, you know, for general population, those moderate physical activity, music and art work. So, you know, from today, anybody can go that, you will have benefits. And then the idea is like to understand which one is the most beneficial, right? And how can we really help you?
So what's next for you? And I know that this study is now out there published and people are talking about it. Is there follow-up work either on this or are there other projects with the Digital Health Circle that you'd like to maybe let us know where, that are coming?
Yes, this idea of bringing different stakeholders together, different group of body of the government together working on is blossoming, and it has been very successful, and we have tackled different problems such as the scientific paper that I explained today, and we want to expand that to other domain of technology. And one of the domain that I'm passionate, as I tell you, I am French, and for me, like, nutrition is very important. Food, you know, it's part also of my background. And one area that I think is hugely important for BC, but also for health, is agriculture. And so one of the notion where we go now, where we try to develop those model of bringing everybody together to try to solve those key problems to really push British Columbia to the top of the world leadership in terms of agriculture and AgTech. So that's going to be one of our next challenge at Simon Fraser University and Digital Health Circle.
So agri-food, tied back to your research. I might add that wine too, knowing that where you're from will be an important component of all of that. Sylvain, this has been a really fascinating conversation, and I'm just feeding off of your energy and your enthusiasm. You're clearly very passionate about this work, and I know that that's a big part of the success. So congratulations on and to you and to your colleagues for publishing this important work. And I really look forward to hearing how we can integrate it more into our communities here. I do think that, again, that people at all levels of government must be thinking about this, talking about this, if only for the bottom line alone, just to make sure that the cost of our healthcare system is not overburdened by this, because just getting out there, being more physically and more active is going to make a huge difference. So I thank you very much. And I'll conclude just by saying that to our listeners, if you would like to know more about the podcast, I would like you to go to www.overcastyvr.ca. In the show notes today, you'll be able to get links to Digital Health Circle and as well to this research. And if you would like to hear more of these kinds of conversations, I invite you once again to go to www.patreon.com/overcastyvr. Sylvain, thank you very much. All the very best. And I look forward to us having another conversation again in the future.
Thank you, Mike. Me too. It was a pleasure.
Bye-bye.